Good morning. This is the KBOO Morning News for Tuesday, March 28, 2006. I'm Brian Smith.
And I'm Chris Andre.
Coming up on this morning's news, White House Chief of Staff Andrew Card has resigned. He will be replaced by administration insider Joshua Bolton. The Supreme Court today will consider military tribunals and Guantanamo Bay detainees in Rumsfeld versus Hamdan. And it's a tense election day in Israel. Portland area weather, partly sunny, chance of showers later on, highs in the low 60s. Tonight, cloudy, chance of showers, temperatures in the 40s, 30s at higher elevations and east of the Cascades.
Two recently released reports sharply question the effectiveness of a proposal to cap state spending that could be on Oregon ballots in November. The Taxpayer Association of Oregon is collecting signatures for an amendment to the Oregon Constitution that would cap state spending. The cap would increase with population growth and inflation, but any other increases would require voter approval. The reasoning behind the proposal is that capping spending will keep taxes low, putting more money in people's pockets and spurring the economy. However, two reports examining the effect of a similar measure in Colorado suggest that spending limits in that state did not fuel economic growth and, in fact, hurt the state's education and healthcare systems. When the spending cap idea was tried in Colorado, that state did see growth during the first 5 years of the cap, but it was similar to what other states in the region did not have a spending cap experienced, and it did not continue.
Portlanders pay some of the nation's highest sewer rates thanks to the $1.4 billion Big Pipe project limiting overflows into the Willamette River. Now the city could be liable for about $200 million more in improvements to its sewage overflow control systems. This from the Oregonian. Mike Bussell serves as top enforcer in the Northwest for the Federal Environmental Protection Agency. His superiors in Washington, D.C. have targeted overflows of sewage as a national priority, and Bussell's office is telling Portland to spend more or face a lawsuit. But Bussell might have been allowed to go too far. Former EPA leaders say the EPA's pursuit of Portland fall outside longstanding guidelines to support local initiatives and shun surprise threats of litigation. Bussell, who is based at the EPA's regional office in Seattle, says he's not picking on Portland. Rather, he's trying to enforce the Clean Water Act in a way consistent with national priorities set by the headquarters.
Hanford oversight groups and environmental advocates say the time's right for the public to dive into the debate about how to clean the West's most polluted site. Contractors will start work soon on a massive report that dissects the way is to deal with waste at the southeastern Washington site, predicting each option's environmental results. Through April 10th, anyone can put in their 2 cents about what options this environmental impact statement should cover. The chance to shape this cleanup comes from one of many lawsuits that mark Hanford's history. In 2004, the U.S. Department of Energy issued a solid waste environmental impact statement. That document looked at ways of treating and disposing of nuclear waste. But many environmentalists and regulators criticized the report as shoddy and incomplete. Washington sued in federal court to block shipments of waste to Hanford and challenged the report. The Energy Department then admitted that the document was flawed and agreed to settle the suit early this year. As part of the settlement, the department agreed to a big new environmental impact statement that tries to come up with a quantitative numerical prediction of the effect of work across the site. This from the Oregonian.
More and more Oregon families who want to buy a home are finding themselves locked out of the American dream. A new study from the Center for Housing Policy shows working families with children are less likely today to own homes than they were in the 1970s. KBOO's Kirk Vanderveer reports.
The American dream of owning a home is fading for many Oregon families. The Housing Policy Report shows it's harder than ever for working families with children to be homeowners. Felicia Tripp with the Portland Housing Center says it's a bleak picture for the newest wave of first-time home buyers in Oregon.
Incomes are not staying up with housing prices. They just aren't.
Tripp says owning a home is very important for families, especially if they have children.
Children have a tendency to do better in school when they're in a stable housing environment. Children that have to be moved from school to school have more difficulty.
Here in the western U.S., just over half of working families with children own houses, lower than in any other part of the country. Oregon housing prices rose 13% statewide last year. In Portland and Medford, prices were up almost 25%. Content was provided by the Oregon News Service. I'm Kirk Vanderveer, KBOO News.
The Oregon Food Bank is warning people of unsolicited cell phone text messages from senders purporting to raise funds on behalf of the food bank. The names associated with these messages are coolcasino.tv and westcoastwages.net. Oregon Food Bank says it has not authorized this promotion and has no relationship with the senders or with this activity. Oregon Food Bank has filed a complaint with the Oregon Department of Justice and is attempting to stop the unauthorized use of its name. This again from the Oregonian.
Anti-seal hunt activists have accused the Canadian authorities of preventing them from carrying out their role as observers of the annual cull. Seven activists were arrested on Sunday for getting too close to some hunters. They were later released, but insist their boat was rammed by the hunters. The U.S. Humane Society members say they have now been grounded and their film seized while an investigation is carried out. Canada insists the cull of 325,000 harp seal pups is needed to control numbers. This from the BBC. White House Chief of Staff Andy Card has resigned and will be replaced, Bush announced today, amid growing calls for a White House shakeup and Republican concern about Bush's tumbling poll ratings. Bush announced the changes in a nationally broadcast appearance in the Oval Office. Bush called Bolton a man with broad experience both on Wall Street and in Washington, including the last 3 years as director of the Office of Management and Budget. The move came as Bush is buffeted by increasing criticism of the war on Iraq, and his fellow Republicans have suggested pointedly that Bush bring in new aides with fresh ideas and new energy. Bolton is widely experienced in Washington, both on Capitol Hill as well as at the White House, where he was Deputy Chief of Staff before becoming Director of the Office of Management and Budget.
Salim Ahmed Hamdan claims he is an innocent father of two young daughters and worked as a driver for Osama bin Laden only to eke out a living for his family. The Bush administration says he's a trained terrorist who should be tried for war crimes before a special military commission. It would be the first such trial since the aftermath of World War II. The case before the Supreme Court today tests the president's powers. Chief Justice John Roberts, who had voted in the case as a lower court judge, won't be involved in the decision. Hamdan is among about 490 foreigners being held as enemy combatants at the U.S. military prison in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Justices ruled 2 years ago that the government could detain enemy combatants but not shut off their access to U.S. courts. In this follow-up case, justices are considering the government's plans for trials before military officers. Hamdan, a Yemeni who was captured in Afghanistan in November of 2001, is charged with conspiracy to commit war crimes, murder, and terrorism. He denies being a terrorist or a member of Al-Qaeda. His appeal claims that the trials proposed by the Bush administration are unacceptable, tilted, and guaranteed to end in convictions.
According to the United Press International, U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia startled reporters in Boston just minutes after attending a mass by making a hand gesture some consider obscene. The Boston Herald reporter asked the 70-year-old conservative Roman Catholic if he faces much questioning over the impartiality when it comes to issues separating church and state. Scalia replied, "You know what I say to those people?" making the gesture and explaining, "That's Sicilian." The 20-year veteran of the High Court was caught making the gesture by a photographer with the Pilot, the Archdiocese of Boston's newspaper. He was attending a special mass for lawyers and politicians at Cathedral of the Holy Mass, and afterward was the keynote speaker at the Catholic Lawyers Guild luncheon.
And triangulating the news, we bring together Scalia and Hamdan in this story. The Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia was asked yesterday to stay out of a case involving a foreign detainee, none other than Hamdan, because of remarks Scalia made about the rights of enemy combatants. Speaking at the University of Freiburg in Switzerland on March 8th, Scalia said foreigners waging war against the United States have no rights under the Constitution. Justices are hearing arguments today in the case of Salim Ahmed Hamdan, a former driver for Osama bin Laden. His lawyers argue that President Bush overstepped his authority when he ordered Hamdan and other alleged enemy combatants to face special military trials. Hamdan's lawyers have not called for Scalia to step aside. Instead, five retired generals who support Hamdan's arguments sent a letter late yesterday to the court with the request that Scalia withdraw from participation in the case. They say Scalia appears to have prejudiced the case.
In a midterm election year, the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee approved legislation yesterday evening that will allow 11 million undocumented people to seek U.S. citizenship. The committee voted on proposed criminal penalties for immigrants found to be in the U.S. illegally and approved a new temporary program for about 1.5 million agricultural workers. There was no immediate reaction from the White House. In the past week, protesters have rallied in cities across the country in opposition to legislation that would make it a felony to be in the U.S. illegally, impose new penalties on employers who hire undocumented immigrants, and build fences along part of the U.S.-Mexican border.
Regulators brought internet political advertising under the nation's campaign finance law yesterday, but they determined that all other political activity on the internet would be untethered by federal rules. The three Republicans and three Democrats on the Federal Election Commission unanimously adopted a rule requiring anyone placing a paid political ad on a website to abide by federal campaign spending and contribution limits. The rule also updates existing FEC regulations to make it clear that all other internet political activity, such as blogging, email communications, and online publications, is not covered by the campaign law. The 2002 campaign finance law requires that ads for or against federal candidates be paid for with money regulated by the law, which limits contributions by individuals to $2,000 and bans unions and corporations from donating.
Undercover investigators slip radioactive material enough to make two small dirty bombs across U.S. borders in Texas and Washington State in a test last year of security at American points of entry. Radiation alarms at the unidentified sites detected the small amounts of cesium-137, a nuclear material used in industrial gauges, but U.S. Customs agents permitted the investigators to enter the United States because they were tricked with counterfeit documents. The Bush administration said yesterday that within 45 days it will give U.S. Customs and Border Protection agents the tools they need to verify such documents in the future. The Government Accountability Office report said detection equipment used by the U.S. Customs agents to screen people, vehicles, and cargo for radioactive substances appeared to work as designed, but the investigation carried out simultaneously at both border crossings in December of 2005 also identified potential security holes terrorists might be able to exploit to sneak nuclear materials into the United States.
Fairfax County, Virginia is taking part in an unusual White House drug study. Wastewater from communities throughout the Potomac River Basin is being tested for the urinary byproducts of cocaine. Board of Supervisors Chairman Jerry Connolly said, apparently they're able to ascertain how many people may be using illicit drugs, in this case cocaine, with such studies. Earlier this month, county workers collected 5 days' worth of water samples at the pollution control plant in Lawton. The samples were sent to a lab to be analyzed for the traces of the main urinary byproduct of cocaine. White House officials believe the wastewater testing will lead to a more accurate index of how many people use drugs than traditional survey research.
Zacharias Moussaoui testified yesterday that he was supposed to be to hijack a fifth jetliner on September 11, 2001 with would-be shoe bomber Richard Reed and fly it into the White House. But the jury also heard the mastermind of the September 11th attacks, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, now in U.S. custody, repeatedly state that Moussaoui was to be part of a second wave of attacks unrelated to the September 11th. In a 58-page statement read to jurors, Sheikh Mohammed said that he only wanted Middle Easterners for September 11th so that the Europeans, like Moussaoui, stood a better chance of mounting a subsequent attack after security was increased. Testifying against the advice of his court-appointed lawyers, Massawi is shocked from the courtroom, shocked the courtroom jurors who will decide whether he is expected or executed or imprisoned for life were almost motionless during the nearly 3 hours on the stand. Massawi's testimony diverged sharply from his previous statements, including his confession when pleading guilty last April. For 3 years, he has said he had no involvement in the September 11th plot. Instead, he said he was taking pilot lessons in Minnesota to fly a 747 jetliner into the White House at a later date if the United States refused to release a radical Egyptian sheikh imprisoned for separate terrorist convictions. Former federal prosecutor Preston Burton said in an interview that Massawi was admitting far more individual involvement than he had made before.
You know, this thing from Ross Story, we had the author, the creator of the site, it on the air. We interviewed her a while back. She's terrific. I can't really pronounce her last name. Alexandrovna is what it is, I believe. We like her very much here. Listeners like her. I'm sure that you perhaps heard her on the air. Her story that was on the Internet last night was, according to one source close to the case, Karl Rove is providing information. This is in the Valerie Plame business. That Grove is providing information on deleted emails, erased hard drives, and other types of obstruction by staff and other officials in the vice president's office. Wow, thank goodness Karl Rove has such a fabulous memory, eh?
The Palestinian parliament overwhelmingly approved the new Hamas cabinet today in a 70-36 vote, setting the stage for the cabinet to take office later this week. Two parliamentarians abstained in the vote.
Okay, continuing on with the Israeli election, which is today. It's the tenth day in Israel. Israelis are expecting to elect a government today that plans for the first time to set the final borders of the Jewish state, ending years of expansionism but still holding on to significant parts of the occupied territories. Opinion polls suggest that Sharon's Kadima party will see off all opposition. Public support is largely held up for continuing his strategy of separating from the Palestinians by moving tens of thousands of settlers and using Israel's vast barrier through the West Bank to mark a frontier. Large numbers of undecided voters could still affect the balance of power in Parliament. However, there are signs of a sharp rise in support for anti-Arab parties on the far right. Surveys give Kadima, under the acting Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, about 36 seats in a 120-seat parliament, up to twice as many as its nearest rival and probable coalition partner, the Labour Party. Olmert has campaigned on what he says was Sharon's vision to use the West Bank barrier as a border. He says he will move about 70,000 settlers living on the Palestinian side of the barrier to larger settlement blocks that Israel will annex. Olmert plans to do this without negotiating with the Palestinians. This from The Guardian.
Senior ministers from the three main Shia factions united yesterday to denounce an American raid on a Baghdad mosque complex in which at least 20 people died. The attack opened the biggest rift between the U.S. and Iraq's majority Shia community since the toppling of Saddam Hussein. Baghdad's governor, Hussein Tahan, a member of the rival Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution of Iraq, Skiri, announced that local officials were ending their contracts with the Americans in protest at the killings. The Interior Minister, Bayan Jaber, also of Skiria, who has been strongly criticized by the U.S. Embassy for his links with Shia militias, told Al Arabiya TV, entering the mosque and killing worshippers was a horrible violation. Innocent people inside offering a prayer at sunset were killed. This from The Guardian.
This has been the KBOO Morning News for Tuesday, March 28, 2006. Chris Andre edited the news, KBOO Newsroom volunteers and reporters produced and edited the tape. Liam Delta is our engineer this morning. Kathleen Stevenson is the AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Brian Smith.
Thanks for listening. We clear the air at 90.7 FM in Portland, 100.7 FM in Corvallis on translator K264AA, 91.9 FM in Hood River on translator K220HR. Be sure to join us for the KBOO Evening News today at 5 p.m. If you want to know more about what goes into making the morning news, and you'd like to, you feel you've got something to contribute, volunteer at the AM Newsroom. Call Kathleen Stevenson at 503-231-8032, extension 202. We really do need your volunteer help putting the news together, and we welcome your participation. Portland area weather today, partly sunny, chance of showers later on, highs in the 50s, lows in the 60s inland. Tonight, cloudy, chance of showers, temperatures in the 40s, 30s at higher elevations and east of the Cascades. Coming up this morning on your community-sponsored neighborhood station, this is your radio, this is your voice, it's you that makes it happen. Call 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. It's you that makes it happen. It's you that needs to stand up now. It's you that needs to be an activist on behalf of yourselves and your community and your society as a whole. Make it happen. Give us a call.